Bankruptcy.
Buy.
Corporation.
Unfortunately.
Present.
Free.
Culture.
As.
In.
Prohibition.
Beer.
Copy.
Wired.
Lesson.
But.
Piracy.
Despite its extraordinary technology for creating a different kind of democratic potential, a different kind of creative potential, despite its potential to mix or remix culture differently, to empower people to speak differently, for think about what this is, a person, a kid, with a $3,000 computer, can take images and sounds and text from around him and remix it and release it on a digital network, and millions across the world will hear this message more powerfully than any letter to the editor in the New York Times. The power to speak differently. To speak in a way that captures the way we understand how to speak today, with media that mixes and expresses its power and the potential of digital technologies. Not broadcast democracy created by this, but a bottom-up democracy. Not the New York Times democracy, but live democracy. Not the few speaking to the many, but peer-to-peer. This is the model of what this technology could enable, and yet this technology is, under the law today, enabling piracy.
Boo.
Because it's enabling the taking of others' creative work and remixing and releasing without the permission of someone else first.
Oops.
We don't see it as something special. We don't see its potential here. And we don't see its potential because it's become hard for us to imagine a world where creativity...
What
is creativity?
Parental
unit number two.
Is not fed to us.
I prefer
to feed
in a certain way. We, like the Soviets, lived for 80 years with a centralized, broadcast, controlled culture and built this permission culture. Where the rules say to take and remix and release requires, in Oliver Twist-like fashion, permission first. Please, sir, may I? May I take this part of our culture and say it differently or criticize it using images and sounds and moving film that will capture and be as powerful a message as the technology enables? We can't remember that. We came from a time where these freedoms were possible. We can't remember that Disney came from a time when these freedoms were possible. So I think we need perspective here to remember these things. And there are many places we could locate our desire for perspective. We could go back to 1976, and the debates about the VCR, which Jack Valenti called the
Japanese
Boston Strangler of the American film industry, a technology that was pirating American film content. Or before that, we could go back to cable TV, which the broadcasters claimed were pirating broadcasted content, or before that to radio, which record producers claimed were pirating their content, or before that film, which Thomas Edison said was pirating his patents when leaders of the American film industry, Fox most prominently, left the East Coast and started Hollywood so that they could escape the intellectual property protections of Thomas Edison. Post. Or before that, photographs and player pianos were technologies to take and Napsterize other people's content. It was piracy that was alleged in the Supreme Court when the Supreme Court decided these technologies should be allowed. We could look at any of these particular instances of technology and tell the story that I'm going to tell, but I'm going to go back further. I'm going to go back to the 19th century. To a story that captures, I think, exactly the potential that digital technologies give us today, and exactly the pathology that will take away that potential if we don't change the law today. So in 1839, this guy, a guy named Louis Daguerre, produced this technology, a daguerreotype. Technology for photographing images and people. It was cumbersome and expensive, and so the market for photography is which consumers could use to capture and share images of the world around them, and the market took off. Now, about the time that George Eastman released this technology, there was a question bouncing around in the courts in the United States and around the world, and the question was, do you need permission before you capture or take or pirate someone's image? The court's answer is no. You didn't need permission to take an image, you didn't need permission to pirate the image. Images were, in this sense, free. Now, this was a significant decision for some. There are some who believe that if a picture was taken without their permission, their soul was stolen by the camera. So it's not like there wasn't much at stake here, but the consequence of this choice about freedom is also responsible for part of the explosion in growth and technology around this consumer technology for capturing and sharing images. But what if the courts had gone the other way? Imagine if the courts had decided that in fact you do need permission before you can capture an image or pirate the image. What if the courts had mandated that the law regulate the process of taking and developing images to assure that these permissions were given? What if there were a Daguerre Machine Control Act?
DMCA.
Regulated the acts that Kodak might engage in reproducing these images? What if the law had regulated this space of freedom? We understand the result. The potential of this technology would not have been this, it would have been this. It would have grown, it would have continued to exist, but burdened by the law's hand of regulation, it would not have exploded in the way that it exploded. Now, with each of the technologies that I went through, with the phonograph, with the player piano, with the radio, with the cable television, with the VCR, the same story could be told again and again. Because each of these technologies could have been burdened in a way that would have stopped the explosive and profound growth that each of them recognized. But in each context, despite the claim of piracy by those whose interests were affected, in each context the law balanced the interests of the properly empowered copyright holders against the potential for this growth. The law was fit to this new technology. In each of these contexts, the law was updated to this new technology to realize the potential of the technology while finding a way to protect the legitimate interests of the creators. In each of these contexts, balance was sought until now. This context, context of the internet and the potential that it offers, is the first time that our law has turned against the technology. It is the first time that our law has been used not to enable the growth and potential of the technology, but to force the technology to fit itself into the mold of the 19th and 20th century law. Now, we wage a war. Which many wars, but this particular war is the war of copyright.
Copyright. Copyright. Copyright. Or copy.
Wrong.
You decide.
It's the war of copyright. A war which this man, Jack Valenti, calls his own terrorist war, where the terrorists are our children. This terrorist war being waged against these technologies so as to protect these technologies and the extraordinary, the important industries that are threatened by them from change. Now, there's a lot missing in this debate. Despite its raging for the last 5 years, still, certain fundamental ideas are not yet part of the ordinary discourse of policymakers, of politicians, I'm talking about this. There are three points that we need to remember now. The first point is something kids teach us. For 80 years, we had a certain conception of media in our head, what we might call commercial media of today. Publishing and film and music and broadcasting, these are extraordinarily important aspects of creative culture. It needs to be protected and must be a part of our future creative culture. 1997, they produced $275 billion in revenue in the United States alone. But these aspects of our past will be different in the future. They will be as big, but they will not be as big as the most important part of the creation of culture in the future. We are moving from this world of the couch potato, where our relationship to culture is the receiver, to a world where we are the producer. This world. The world that produces this as creativity. And when we see what children do as they spend time with machines, we see that the more they live with these machines, the more they become creators with them. And that the future of this space is like the future of photography in 1888. Where you move from consumers to creators. Not really that that's non-commercial, because of course the explosion of photography supported a very large commercial industry, but differently commercial. Here's the point. In relation to this potential industry, the current commercial media is tiny. We have a tiny industry, not that it will shrink, but that the other part of the creative culture that will be realized will be much bigger and more significant. This will continue to be governed by the traditional strict rules of copyright, but something more reasonable and flexible is necessary for this other part of culture. The part of culture where people are free to mix and rip and share culture with each other without this activity being illegal. This extraordinary potential is lost if we make the rules of the future with only this tiny part of commercial media in mind. If the rules of the future are fixed on the tiny part of the past, and if we ignore the potential this creativity could produce, then we will suffer what Kodak never suffered. This opportunity squashed to this future. That's the first thing, what kids teach us, because they show us what the future of technology will be. The second lesson is what kids did, because of course the past, where we had these outbreaks of piracy, they were the kids who were the pirates in each of these industries, and they became the moguls of these industries. In film and recording and radio and cable and even Sony, the pirates became the leaders of the industry that they once pirated. And as they did this, they evolved copyright law to fit their model of doing business. Now, copyright law remains a crucial, important part of this creative process. But it changes, as it has changed in the past. It's not a black and white tool. There is not either copyright or not. There is a mix of rules that are tuned to a technology as it has happened in the past. We have both access and restriction. In a context historically governed by a certain sanity, the sanity in the debate, which this debate has lost. Finally, what kids learn. Our country's filled with criminals. The Napster generation. People who have cell phones. Criminals everywhere. People who are using content on this network, despite its creative potential, commercial potential, democratic potential. These people are pirates. Now, who do we make when we speak of our children like this? We wage this war of prohibition against 40 to 60 million Americans. And as we wage this war, we become more extreme. They become more extreme as they sue 12-year-olds for downloading music. We become more extreme as we, in response, increasingly reject any place for intellectual property in this debate. This extreme is captured in the grace of video I'm going to show you right now. The first is an ad by Apple and Pepsi celebrating their great solution to the downloading problem.
George. Buster.
So you can imagine the ad execs were really proud of their edgy, cool, connected with the downloading generation. But this is what the downloading generation fed back.
Fight back political authority, criminated by an illegal monopoly, chosen by a criminal organization, of a church and music, busted with your tax dollars, payback of your book, the recording industry, cheap artists, schools, consumers, and was the real criminal.
This extremism forces a different kind of extremism. And the consequence of both extremisms is the destruction of something that's extraordinarily important. The opportunity of this technology and this culture realizing the potential of this technology. We need peace. It's an insane war. It's one of many insane wars we wage. This is an insane war here. Because the insanity of this war defeats the extraordinary potential for commerce, for creativity, for democracy in this world. Produce. And if we lose this war, if we wage it as we've waged it, then we lose more than money here. Jack Valenti loves to say that he fears this generation of, as he calls them, criminals, who've grown up learning not to respect the law. And as you think about it, and think about what this generation grows up experiencing, as they are told they can't drink until they're 21, yet they do before they're 21, as they're regulating the thousand ways in which they actually live life, breaking the rules of regulation. When it comes to music, and they're told it's illegal to do what they do with music, and even illegal to do the things that I demonstrated when I called the examples piracy. And he's right. We're producing a generation of people who act as criminals. But his response is to increase the violence of the war. When our response should be to find a way to make it so this behavior is no longer criminal. To to find a way to make it so we can pay artists in the context of technology that does not control perfectly how people are able to engage in this act of free culture. To find a way to make it so the same freedoms that Disney had, our children have too. There's an organization I'm sure many of you know, MoveOn.org. It was born in the Clinton administration attempting to get Congress to move on from the last time presidents lied to the people about something as dangerous as affairs. And this organization has become an extraordinarily powerful organization. Millions of people have joined it. And it represents, in an important way, the internet brought to politics. Because it's millions of people from a bottom-up, grassroots way who joined initially to create the pressure that MoveOn could deliver and continues to put the pressure that MoveOn can deliver. And so they thought they would attempt to recognize this bottom-up creativity by running a contest. And they ran an ad contest called Bush in 30 Seconds, where they invited people from around the world to contribute ads that attempted to describe President Bush in 30 seconds. They said it could be pro-ads or anti-ads. Apparently it takes more than 30 seconds to say something nice about President Bush, because they only got anti-Bush ads. They got 1,500 of these anti-Bush ads in this Bush in 30 Seconds .org competition. And these 1,500 ads were produced by kids and some media people and an extraordinary range of creators who contributed their work in a way that was subsequently made available to others under a Creative Commons license, a kind of instance of this bottom-up democracy, bottom-up speech. The winner of this competition produced this ad.
Commercial
available at MoveOn.org.
CBS was happy to run White House ads on the war on drugs, or tobacco companies' ads telling the world how great tobacco companies are, or lots of Viagra ads. And of course, in addition to the Viagra ads, there was the Janet and Justin show during that Super Bowl, which produced the outrage. But of course, all of that was permitted. This ad was too controversial. Now, this outrage that was produced from this behavior of CBS led to congressional hearings, and it led to hundreds of editorials. But of course, what was this outrage focused on? It was focused, of course, not on the fact that though this extraordinary organization had produced through this collective process this amazing expression of an idea and was not permitted to run it, that's not what was outrageous. What was outrageous is that in addition to the Viagra ads, we had a flash of the breasts. Super Bowl. That's what the outrage was about. We couldn't even imagine. We couldn't write about how extraordinary it was that this effort at speech was not allowed. This effort by this organization, which speaks in a certain way, in the same way the potential of the internet speaks. This is a measure of how far we have to go to reimagine the ideals Disney live the ideals of this free culture. Just as the world of free speech, free markets, and free society establishes a balance in the protections and access that free culture demands too, we have to reimagine this and recreate it, rebuild it, before this potential is lost to us and to our children, and to promise to our democracy that this different way of speaking